understand what you're talking about. You're talking about since you see the first paragraph we've got, 1-1, from 19th August to 19th September. So it's the third quarter, right? Just to remind you, we then look at the oversight of entities. We should make a change in 2.2 we read yesterday, which is saying that in some phases we may emphasize certain entities, and in other phases of our work we may emphasize other entities. Legislation covers that, double taxation agreements. There are estimated 15 agreements, including the SACU agreement, our annual reports we should start. We spoke to Cindy about maybe starting in the last week of this quarter, because next quarter we're overwhelmed by the MTBPS and the processes around that. SAAB briefing, it's been sent to you. Can members please comment on, if you have any comments you want to verbalize, no, fine. What do you think we should exchange with the Reserve Bank on, other than what they have actually suggested to us following an exchange I had with them some weeks back? Yeah, John?
Thank you, Chairperson. One issue I wanted to raise anyway on this report is that what is not in this report are specific issues that we want to debate, economic issues. So maybe that's something for us to discuss. You know, and then also on this report, yeah, and then
what report?
I mean, what is it?
It's a program.
Okay, program.
It's not a report. Secondly, okay. We talked about the SAAB. Is it?
Yes, I know. I'm being there. I'm being there.
Reserve Bank. Yeah.
This was the prelude to what I wanted to say.
Oh,
okay. I want to say that the big issue at the moment is the African bank near collapse, and of course now the contagion that seems to be arising from that. We saw the downgrade yesterday of four of our national banks, major banks, by Moody's. So I do think that there is something that we need to engage with the Treasury and with the SAAB as soon as possible. And I did write you a letter. I hope you got it. Oh, okay. I'll... No. I sent it to your email address. But anyway, I think the key thing is, Chairperson, I do think that we as a committee would be sleeping at the wheel if we didn't move quickly on that matter. Thank you. Good. Okay. Thank you.
This is, unfortunately, is not that precise, okay? So, of course we agree. Can you look at it? Any other things you think we should discuss with the Reserve Bank?
Around the bailout of African banks, because it's a very topical issue out there,
yeah.
And people believe that this is the bank that chose to get into risky assets and risky environment and so forth. And I think maybe we need to get a clarity from the Reserve Bank as to what informs their bailout.
So,
there's
two things that seem to be arising. One is, when we exchange with the Reserve Bank on the 2nd and 3rd of September, this issue has to be on the agenda. But I think the subtext of what both of you are saying is that we should also have a hearing. Okay, fine. Is that what I understand both of you to be saying? In addition to that, good? Okay, Pink?
Check with you. The Twin Peaks report, is it more with the Minister or with the Reserve Bank or both?
Reserve Bank. Anybody know in respect of the Twin Peaks legislation? Do we need to raise it when we're with them?
That's
all, I support Pinky on the issue of the Twin Peaks to be discussed with the Reserve Bank. We saw yesterday that the powers in terms of the Twin Peaks regulation has been extended by to the FSB. Now, what would the Reserve Bank's position be in terms of their prudent regulation? I think Pinky is quite right that it needs to be discussed. And may I add a second point, if I may? Thank you, sir. Yes. Absolutely. So, yes, and then with regards to property syndication, the Reserve Bank played a huge role in terms of the share match regulation, in terms of the prudent role. And there were some directives issued and withdrawn, and I think it's still on the agenda. I haven't found a conclusion or sustainable solution with regards to it. Perhaps we can just flag the property syndicates regulation and the role the Reserve Bank plays in that. I can flag that as well. Thank you, sir.
Chairperson, the Twin Peaks legislation to school financial sector regulation bill being developed by the National Treasury but in close cooperation with both SHARP and the FHC. Because they both would play eventually the role of prudential regulator and multi-conduct regulator.
The question is about, do we really want to exchange except meetingly with the Reserve Bank before we get a proper overview from National Treasury? I mean, it should be an item on the agenda, but we should have a proper perspective on it. It's not the Reserve Bank's view, it's National Treasury's. And if you look at our program, under 3.2, it says if time permits and NT is ready, we will receive initial briefings on the Twin Peaks Bill and retirement reform proposals before the end of the year. Right? So, they are going to come to us. I'm saying in short, let's have it to the SARB, but let's have a limited discussion. Yeah.
Thank you, Chairperson. I'm sure you will recall that after the global financial crisis in 2008 and then subsequent years with the recession, Twin Peaks was mooted as a, I don't know, what would you call it, a regulated framework that would prevent such a thing from happening again. So Twin Peaks is quite big and it's an international phenomenon, and I think in the UK they rolled it out already last year. But there have been some difficulties with Twin Peaks already, it seems. So I do think we could separate them, because I know there is a bill coming, but the whole concept of the Twin Peaks, the FSB and the Reserve Bank have a very, very big role to play, and they need to work together on it. And, you know, so I don't think that we need to be too concerned if we haven't had a big overview from the Treasury, because what you're trying to find out is the essence of what does this thing look like. Now, good. Okay.
Garrulous today, you can be so, but me agree. I don't know why people are... What's the word, flogging a dead horse? Is that an expression? No, I'm disagreeing. We're agreeing, which is very rare. John, I'm getting worried. Thinking you might get old before days gone wrong, right? You and John and Ross are all agreeing. I'm noticing that, Pinky. All right, so basically, after 2 6 weeks of research, as noted that, we will then write a letter to Jill Marcus, the governor, and say to her these are the things we want. Anything else you want on that item?
No.
Right, 7 research and policy issues, we've agreed on 7.1. 7.2, can you guide us? How are we going to do this, by the way? Because you can't ask the research office they can do something, but it's really a political discussion. The last proposal I've got is that we start in that capacity building thing. We have a session there on economic transformation. It's a closed workshop, so we can have a frank discussion as part of an ongoing process of preparing a document. It's not going to happen overnight. So that's what I'm suggesting. You see, if you look at our program, you will see on Wednesday the 17th, we're trying to do a whole day thing. We discuss it then. Is that agreeable for now? It's like research policy work. If we have an open session, we're all going to be just repeating the platitudes of our respective parties. But we can do that if you want.
Thank you, sir. I initially requested the item to be discussed. And 7.1 and 7.2, if I can just briefly say. No, no, I made the proposal to, and I wrote the letter to the budget office. Yeah, that was on 7.1. You see, we also need some information with regards, and I think we agreed on the term radical economic transformation, what it means, and I think the budget office could give us a more technical explanation, and that would be helpful. And I'm also of the opinion in terms of the amounts in terms of the budget deficits and in terms of the current account deficits, perhaps the trends and those are the issues, the more intellectual issues that the budget office can assist us with in terms of establishing what the trends are in terms of and in terms of figures and over years how it happens and what we should be careful of and how we can improve this budget.
Yeah,
agreed. Find there's an academic aspect to it.
John?
Thank you, Chairperson. I remember when we did our report early on this year when we were talking about this radical transformation. I would very much be interested in finding out what it means, and I think I raised it then, because there are two terms that confuse me slightly. It's the National Democratic Revolution and then the National Development Plan, which don't seem to tie up together. Perhaps I don't understand them. So I would be very, very interested if we could get a presentation from the appropriate parties or persons to say, this is what is meant by the National Democratic Revolution. This is the economics that, you know, sits under it and underpins it. And then this is the NDP. Now, we know the NDP, but I'm interested in the other part, because somehow they don't seem to dovetail in some way. So if I could get my mind around it, then I could understand it better. Because I always talk about incoherent economic policy. It is incoherent to me, because I can't see how they fit. So if we could, I'd be very happy. Thank you, Chair.
You can come to a political education workshop in the Northern Cape, and Tanti Tobias is managing. Don't worry. So come to the NDP. But the problem is, not the problem, it's a simple thing. You know what? Filling the membership form. You can't cross the floor, unfortunately, the legislation is gone. If you want to know all of those things, come to all of our political education. You have to be a member. Can we get membership forms for them, Tanti? Tanti, can we? Yeah, Tanti says you're bringing through membership forms. Fine. Now, on a more serious note, yes, I saw somewhere your statement that the NDR and the NDP don't quite match. And yeah, we can have that discussion. We don't need what do these young people know? With due respect to them. We can do it here, yes. Fine. That can be managed by the team here.
Now, what do you answer? Is what the chairperson stating on hindsight pertaining to him getting a card and all that? The chairperson.
Applies to that, I know it, unless things have changed. Hindsight applies to the National Assembly and NCOP, right? Here is the committee secretaries. And obviously I doctor the minutes, right? So I say the chairperson spoke eloquently on this issue, and everybody broke into applause. But you know what? We must have a sense of humor, you know, we shouldn't take ourselves over seriously. Especially as we're going to deal with very dry stuff next week. Tax laws. Except for Makosi, what do we know about tax issues with due respect to the rest of us? Race and monetary tax code. And the differentiate tax administration laws. I'm too young. Okay, Tani. Tani, shall I reveal publicly what you just said earlier today in the tea? In a tea place. Okay. On a serious note, can we agree that we will do some research, obviously, in this area, but if it's in choice of words, it's more fundamentally political. So I'm saying there's no research component. But ultimately, it's a political process, and largely led by the majority party, obviously. On capacity building, our workshop is on the 17th, the MTBPS. Cindy did a very nice thing. Maybe the new members need to know, Alan, on what we have to do. So maybe we can send that out in one pager. Alan, can you, our two friends from PBO and Cindy's document, which I think you have, just spell out what we will have to do. The next quarter has to be very clustered and cluttered and it move fast. Then obviously I've had several meetings with Professor Zayed. And as I told you, since we don't have a content advisor yet, and our research is on maternity leave, and there's no replacement, the two gentlemen are helping us to the extent they can. We have met the chairs. We are meeting tomorrow with the PBO, the four chairs concerned, the appropriations and finance committees in the two houses, together with the house chair, Cedric Froning. So we've delivered on that. I've been testing for a meeting, it's tomorrow. And also to say that we have had a meeting of the four chairs, and we've agreed to work closely together, especially with the Appropriations Committee and the NA. So there's a lot of work ahead, but it doesn't mean we can't have fun. After that, you see the actual details. Now, we need to make one or two changes here to take account of what members have said. So I think, there's no need to look at it here. We will discuss the African Bank within the next 2 weeks. Okay? Latest 3 weeks. But that and the other issues. Maybe we need to look at whether we go to the Reserve Bank first before we discuss it. That might be, maybe we do it the week immediately after. Is that agreeable? So we go to the Reserve Bank on the 2nd, the week after we change the program. Cindy, can you alert your people? If the minister can come, very good, or the deputy. Because it's a very, very current issue. And look at the headlines in business here in Cape Town. So maybe you can get the minister or deputy minister. Send me a DG, please. Okay, so this is our program for this quarter, right? This is a framework for the program and the actual details of it. The secretary prepared that. Okay. Right, thank you. So we are moving. How do you move for this? And second, this is our program for this quarter with the amendments we've agreed on. I'm trying to check whether somebody from one of the banks is not spying on us. The gentleman came there, poked his head across there, and now he's smiling again.
Okay. So there we are. Who's that on there?
Thank you.
Right. Now let's move on to the issue before us. You will recall we had the submission by Shelter on the DBSA.
Well,
and they essentially argued, as I recall, that they would like a representative on the board of directors because so much of DBSA's work falls on local government and it will increasingly do so in the period ahead. They would like to have a say on the appointment of such a person. That more or less is answered. In principle, we agreed as a committee, but now we have to hear Treasury's response to that and see what our final view is. And then we will go through, we'll start the process line by line, seeking the bill informally, and hopefully vote on it very shortly, because we have three other bills that come to us informally next week. Over to, is that a correct reflection of what we need on Helen, Peter Paul, where's Peter Paul?
Alright, so that was more or less what we discussed, right? Is that correct, my friend from Nash? What's your name again?
MD van Square. MD van Square.
MD van Square. Oh, there you are. Alright, so normally we use first names except for visitors. We don't call you Ms. van Square. For advocate van Square. Okay. But you only call by your first name so much it is easier. You know? It's what you say, not the titles you have that matter in mind.
Anyway, now here we are. Over to you. Was that not more or less what was the outcome of our consideration of what Fraga said? That's it. Okay, so what's your reply?
Thank you very much, Chairperson. I'm first time Chuan MP. I also believe titles doesn't mean much. First of all, thank you very much for the opportunity to respond to the submission made by Shalva, and I'll repeat maybe briefly what you already reiterated from the submission of Shalva. They requested that the DBS Act be amended to provide for at least one member of the board of the DBSA to be a local government expert nominated by organized local government. In their submission, they indicate the reason for this is to ensure that the board makes informed decisions on matters affecting the majority of its clients, which is currently municipalities in South Africa, and to act in their best interest. And then specifically they mention, and this is to ensure that the funding and governance arrangements address municipalities' needs. So that was an issue in summary, the submission from Shalva. Now, when dealing with Shalva's submission, it's requested that the committee take the following considerations and proposals into account. Firstly, as you all know, the bank is a development finance institution. And the primary purpose, which also in Shalva's submission they indicate, is to promote economic development and growth, HR development, capacity building, by using or mobilizing resources from both international and private, international and national, public and private sectors. Now, and then also just to reiterate, which we in the initial presentation or briefing of the committee indicated, is that since December 2013, the bank may also operate in African countries and outside the Sahel region. Now, currently, the DBS Act provides for a board of not less than 10 and not more than 15 members. Now, currently, a full complement of 15 members are on the board. There's recently some new appointments were made since some terms of some members lapsed. Some people were reappointed. Now, according to the current 100% shareholding by the state, the Minister of Finance appoints all the directors to the board. Now, there is the possibility of someone, other institutions taking up shares in the bank, but that has never happened to date. So therefore, currently the Minister of Finance has decided to appoint all the directors. Now, the key part of the Act of Use is the criteria for appointment to the board is in Section 7.3. It provides the grounds for the ability and experience in relation to socioeconomic development, development finance, business finance, banking and administration. And I want to emphasize that the aspect of socioeconomic development. In Solver's admission, I also refer to the role of local government as a government to promote social and economic development. They also emphasize that the close cooperation, collaboration that currently exists between the bank and municipalities, and given all the work that's taking place. Our submission is that local government expertise is embedded in the mentioned expertise that is in Section 7.3 of the Act, and it must be considered by the minister when appointments are made to the board. And the other important emphasis that we would like to make is that the current criteria for appointment are based on expertise and not representation of any interest such as the clients of the bank. And also important to note that currently on the board there are two directors with local government expertise or background, and that's Mr. Omar Atif and Mr. Mark Schilling. Further, just to indicate in general, Treasury obviously has a number of entities, or the Minister of Finance has a number of public entities in the portfolio of the Minister. In order to obtain names, what Treasury does is to publish an advertisement every year for people to apply, so then they keep a database, so when vacancies arise, that list is considered by the Minister before making appointments to the board. In terms of the Solgar's proposal is that the concern is that if representation is provided for one interest or stakeholder group as proposed by Solgar, it will open up the possibility of others claiming the same consideration, possibly other clients, although they may be minority clients calling them. Now, in view of the above, it's submitted that the current provision in the Act for appointment of directors based on expertise is appropriate, and that local government interests are taken care of directly or indirectly in appointments to the DBSA board. It's therefore recommended that the Act need not be amended for interest group representation in general or by one interest group on the board. But should the committee decide that an amendment is desirable, the following two options are suggested for consideration. The one could be the minister initiating a process to amend the regulations to provide that when members of the board are to be appointed, the interest of affected stakeholders must be considered, so there's a specific requirement in the regulations. Currently, the Act provides that the minister must appoint directors in the manner determined by the regulations, but the regulations doesn't currently have any specific criteria or additional requirements above, in addition to what's in Section 7.3 of the DBSA Act. Or alternatively, to insert the provision in Section 7 to expressly provide in the Act itself that the venue minister makes appointments or whoever is the majority shareholder, that the interest of affected stakeholders must be considered. Thank you very much.
Responses, please. John?
Thank you, Chairperson. We agree with the National Treasury that when you're looking at the board, obviously you need to look at expertise, etc. I don't think that we need to add a specific person from Shell onto this board. Thank you, Chair.
Chair, I just got this. Not necessarily that we don't wish to see Salga being represented in the board of the DBSA. I think the most important thing is the fact that Salga is a political structure or institution. And they also have representation which, you know, they are entitled to claim representatives in the NGOP. And there is nothing that stops a client, a bank, you know, engaging in relationship.
So I think maybe we instead of legislating salary representation, probably we need to be thinking about, you know, creating an environment where salary can engage with the DSA with whatever time.
Chef, my discussion will come to this stakeholder interest in terms of representation. There's a very fine line about what would be the interest of Salga in this context and what National Treasury might perceive as sufficient representation. I don't know whether you catch my point. There's a fine line between what Salga might perceive as a representation that will hold their views clearly and what the National Treasury might deem as enough representation. Now, if there's a stakeholder interest, there's a high stake. So I'm going to suggest differently. I'm going to suggest that this matter is discussed between ourselves, Salga, and the National Treasury to try and discuss it. In an event that it doesn't lead to an unintended consequence where actually Salga might object to legislation because they believe that there's no adequate representation, to avert a situation of unnecessary conflict and delay in the legislation itself. So I suggest that you engage the two parties to try and find a way of letting them find each other or resolving what they said. Because I've read Salga's presentation and how they coin it and how they perceive what's their own representation and how the National Treasury says it's representation. They differ in the understanding on what's representation. And I come from the township, and in the township people say, one of us in there. Whether you want to present that there's have a of skills that can speak on their behalf, if they believe that those people doesn't represent them, they're going to find a way of concluding what they mean. So I suggest that we need to make them find each other and have an agreement so that when we finalize the decision, at least they understand it on their own and become the different. I don't know what it's about.
Chair, thank you. I think having looked at the way the response by National Treasury is structured systematically, one arrives at a point that says probably, and I know I'm one of the people who are proposing for that representation. I think it was an emotional thing that we did. And I'll tell you why, Chair. Having looked at the response of National Treasury, we're talking about a board, and we're talking about the minister appointing members of the board. There are two paragraphs as you go down. Can we scroll? Go again. There are two options that, where is it? Yeah. You see this last bullet. If the committee decides that an amendment is desirable, following two options are proposed for consideration. Amendment of DBSA regulation to provide when appointing directors the interest of affected stakeholders must be considered, or an insertion for a provision of Section 7 of the Act to provide that when appointing directors the interest of affected stakeholders must be considered. To me, this puts me at ease, and I'll tell you why. The appointment of board members, it's a public activity that everybody is aware of. that whoever is interested can also lobby for appointment and whatever. So Starter can play in this space. You know, it will be wrong and it will be setting a very long precedent to amend an act for a particular interest group. And once we start to do that, it's a precedent. Rather, let's stay with this and make Salga to also do their behind the curtain thing and lobby, like any other interest group, so that when the minister appoints, I mean, ministers get influenced by other critical stakeholders who may want this and that to be dealt with. I'm not sure I'm right, but it's something that I shouldn't be emotional again. But I'm just saying, Chair, we run the risk of doing something that is wrong and that may also put us in a very tight corner going forward. Rather, let's live with what Treasury is saying and then look at this option and allow people to do their work as critical interest groups to lobby when appointments are done. Because obviously, even when the bigger chunk of municipalities also utilize DBSA, they utilize DBSA on their own terms. They set terms as municipalities. You know, so DBSA does not dictate on what should be done. They need that capacity, but then again, they agree. So that's my humble submission, Chair.
Chair, I wanted to just concur with Pinky and say, you know, we must remember that DBSA is a bank. And when they are looking for, when they are looking at board members, they also look at people who have the particular expertise consistent with the industry norms. And by that, I know, for example, I know that Omar Radif, even previously, they've always taken local government into account. But you might actually find that SALGA may have a representative, maybe who may not necessarily have these expertise that are required. For example, currently, the Omar Radif that they're talking about is also an expert. He's well known. He's a professor of tax, of taxation. And therefore, he's adding, and he's the former mayor of Pietermaritzburg. I was his deputy at some stage. So I'm saying we must not constrain, we must not come with the legislation that is going to make it difficult to attract the necessary skills that are required to sustain the bank.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. I think we all agree that we will not be moving towards changing legislation. But it is quite important that as part of our oversight, as part of the good relationships between SALGA and Treasury and other stakeholders, we actually try and move towards the statement which was said by Madam here at the back, so that we actually sit down and address matters, because it's important for them as they interact with the community or within the community to still have very good relationships. Definitely we are aware that when it comes to board members and everything else, in the end everything needs to go to the papers and then it is advertised and everything else and the lobbying. But the maintaining of this good relationship or a good working relationship is also critical. So I think the committee needs to play a part where we can try and actually ensure that that happens. Thanks.
One is, my own view, I mean, the majority feel we should profit UMCU. It's not a do or die matter. But the first thing is, I don't think it's appropriate to describe SALGA as an interest group. I think SALGA represents a sphere of government. Secondly, the majority party must decide what it wants. I thought the majority party's view is that local government is utterly crucial, and I know that people are already gearing for 2016. Thirdly, I also know that, because maybe the roles I've played, Makosi may know this as well, the which is without a loop in the last few years, there have been ongoing issues about the relationship between DVSA and local government. I'm privy to some information that makes me feel that the relationship is nowhere near where it should be. When I served as Deputy Minister of COCSA, that was one of the mandates and responsibilities I was given by the Minister in 2009. And I know there are these issues. I also think that it's not clear to me what these amendments mean, quite frankly. The one is very weak. It says amendment of DVSA regulations. Well, that's a ministerial prerogative. Parliament has nothing to do with that. So we must understand what we agree to. If we agree to that, that's, it's meaningless because we don't have the power to exercise oversight over that unless it's a specific regulation that the law provides for, which must be subjected to parliamentary scrutiny. So it's like a symbolic gesture. But if that's what the majority want, as I said, I'm cool. If you want a symbolic gesture, we can do it. It's meaningless, huh? What does this mean? The interests of affected stakeholders must be considered. I mean, that's very weak. National Federal Jews speak to you. That's meaningless. The interests of affected stakeholders must be considered. That's like a bland, you know what, Americans, what pie, what? Apple pie and I don't know what they say. It's like a, what? Yeah, it's meaningless. I mean, obviously you're taking the interests of all stakeholders. What does our parliamentary committee add of value in agreeing to that? With due respect to Congress and colleagues. Then on insertion of a provision in Section 7, that when I mean the, let's drop it. If that's how it's a meaningless thing, what does that mean? Can you reply? It's actually very weak. In fact, your last section makes me feel I'm thinking of myself. The ANC will meet as a collective next week and take its final decision. But as a chair, I want to point out to myself, it's very weak proposals, which makes me think that we either drop it, leave it as it is, or we don't go for your two proposals. My own view is they're very weak. They add no value to anything. They're not legally, what's the word they use? Tandy, you should know, maybe you're a chair from the hundreds of years. What's the word? It's not legally, there's a word they use. It's a meaningless thing. It's like, has no value, no legal meaning. I don't know the word, you should know. What's the word we used to use before 2009? There's a word the lawyers used to use. And I'm sure I'm getting old now. You know? Now there's another word they use. This is no legal, it's like a pie in the sky. It's soft. So my suggestion is, either we leave things or we change them substantially. There is one other proposal you can think of. It's clumsy. And you can find the finesse. And I don't know what members will think. But members, can I ask, why don't we look at page of what they say. Right? Now look here, page 4, or slide 4, at the very bottom. Can't we add something like, now look, there's a very clumsy formulation, maybe the two of you and the National Treasury can help, a clumsy formulation. Something like the grounds of their ability and experience in relation to all those things, and including of the administration. I don't know how you put it. It's not elegant. As it applies to local governments. So in other words, I agree with members who say SELGA should not appoint a person to the board. Agreed. Because then it becomes a representative role, as Makosi is implying. And a bank should have a board of directors that, as a collective, have this range of expertise. The issue might arise that the board member representing SELGA will answer to SELGA executive and take mandates from there and be more accountable to SELGA than to the collective on the board that takes account of a variety of things that the board has to take account. So I think I agree with members who say SELGA should not appoint its own directors. I agree with that. For the reasons I said, I'm going to give better reasons I will, but we all agree on that. So why don't we agree that SELGA shouldn't appoint its account to anybody? It shouldn't be a representative thing. Because you are right, except you use the word interest group, as I say, weakens your arguments, right? But it's fine. You can use the interest. But your two proposals, I'd like to plead with members to consider. They're meaningless, really. They pie in the sky stuff. So either we amend it by putting in something under 7.3 along the lines of saying, more elegant, I'll think of a formulation overnight and pass it on to members. But really, Jenkins You are representing Parliament, aren't you? That's what you're saying. That's your job, not mine. If the meeting agrees that we consider that, then I think it becomes your job as National Treasury and Women's Work League. It's not my job. I used to do that before. It's not my job. I'm getting old now. You must do it. But the final thing I want to say is I agree with Sandy that we must seek consensus. Actually, whatever, you know, the committees that I chaired before, we would actually go back to stakeholders and say, this is the reason if you have, in local government, you still have like 80 stakeholders. Each member, I hope the members are listening, particularly Pinky and Makosi here. I would like to propose this to the study group next week. In previous committees that I chaired, if we had 80 submissions, they said, Makosi, these five, you replied to them on why the 10 proposals they made, these three we agreed to, these three we can't agree to because they're not doable, these two are unconstitutional, these two make it 5 years of permanent capacity. So similarly, I think we must reply, Alan. I'll handle this one, but members have to start specializing in the area soon. I will facilitate a response to Selga and say, look, this is what the committee talked about. If we don't have a consensus, we should bring Selga in with a small meeting, maybe the Whip and myself, or Makosi and myself, preferably, because this is an area local. Maybe Makosi and myself meet with you and your officials and the Selga people. We can do a teleconference, you know, reply it, and see if we can tell them, look, we can't do what you're saying, but we have covered you. So I agree with Sandy. We should try to make Selga feel important, because they are important. We must take them very seriously. And the more seriously we take them, the more likely they are to play a more effective role out there. So what I'm suggesting, my friend, is that members, I'm not saying we take a decision now. Think about it. These two proposals are just very weak, actually. They're meaningless. We'd either drop that, or if we want to put something valuable in, we consider amending 7-3. But if the majority don't agree with me next week, I'm cool. Who am I? I'm just 1 year out of 500, right? So one gets defeated. Yes, Pinky?
I fully agree with you on your approach, and I thought I want to check with you whether the meeting between, which I agree to, between you, Makosi, and Selga and whoever can take place before we engage on this item next week, because that's what I would be happy with.
Alright. We're flying 600 people up. We've got a small half an hour meeting, right? We do it by teleconference. You don't have to fly up. We do it with Makosi and I will talk and we will suggest the time. But what is your response, National Treasury, to all the things we've said?
I think maybe the term we should use, which we're in this office, is a stakeholder in relation to the bank. Municipalities are stakeholders, of course, or clients. The term used by Solva, so I understand your concern about the term interest. But obviously, what our proposal is not to amend that, and therefore we proposed those alternatives. And the point that we try to make. Yes, but
the second one is an amendment to the Act. The first is a meaning.
Yes, no, that's correct. But no, we don't amend regulations every day, but you're correct. The minister can come tomorrow and start changing the regulations. It's outside the control of Parliament. The proposal that you suggested of amending that clause that deals with the expertise, and that's our main argument, is that the board appointments are based on expertise. And I think that proposal we would support them, but obviously end of the day is the committee's decision, and we will work together with Patrick Jenkins on our proposed wording for that clause.
For the committee, it's my own position. I don't know if I carry the majority, so I ask them to think about it, maybe the study groups or to meet and so on. Tandy? But if the majority want to agree here and mandate you to work on a draft, that's fine. But I thought this change is just an
I thought I was not intending to cover on the issue because we covered this is a lawyer and this is Selga, and then we've got different interpretations and you know, we needed just space to clarify it. And it was going to be nice like the way the council would be calling it, and then we clarify it nicely and then
there's no hardship. You know, in the council, we throw stones, chairs, petrol bombs.
I'm intimidating my colleague here from National Treasury. Okay, Makoshi, you want to say something?
Something. Usually there's always something, I don't know here in this environment, what will you call it, that outlines the criteria for the appointment of the board. Like, for example, they would mention the different skills that would be required. So local governance and administration probably could be inserted in that space so that you actually accommodate further. I mean, usually, if you look at the adverts that are inviting people to apply to become members of the board, there's usually that. Maybe we could propose that local governance and administration be included as a critical skill that is going to be required in there, so that it's not left loose and Stalka is going to feel comfortable that their interests are taking into account. Their interest not in your perspective.
I think these are some of the discussions that will ensue when you meet with Naga, and I would just observe that as long as you have that blank check.
Yeah, fine.
What
do you respond quickly to that?
Our interpretation of the current criteria in a socio-economic development, that would include local government, but maybe you think local government is more than that. It's not just about... So the one way would be what Jefferson suggested, to add a part, or you can make it as part of the list, specifically say in relation to socio-economic development, local government, etc. We will come back later, but I do think maybe the chairperson's proposal is a better way of dealing with this.
What are you mandating Makosi need to do? So you don't say, you see the chair and Makosi just went off and did their own thing. And I understand what we now say. You're saying basically that we agreed now. They can't have direct representation on the board. I'm not going to cover that ground. But we feel that, with due respect to National Treasury, both of the two proposals you've got are slightly, let's put it this way to be diplomatic, slightly falling short. So we are suggesting an amendment to 7.3. So what we can do is go with a concrete amendment to Shelga and say, are you okay with this? So can we mandate Jenkins, yourself, I'll do something as well, I sent it to Makosi, in the lead up to the meeting with National Treasury, which should occur over the next 48 hours or maybe even on Monday for the teleconference, let's look at availability. I'll speak to Makosi after this meeting. Is that what we're agreeing on? Okay, alright, thanks. Then we have to, friends, go through a clause by clause treatment of the bill, which we haven't done. Now, I asked Alan, excuse me, colleague, I asked Alan to get the original act so that we cross-reference where necessary. And Advocate Jenkins, I'm not exactly sure, but on what we've just discussed, do you have anything to say?
Chair, no, I think this is a very valuable conversation or deliberation that continues. I agree with the outcome of it, as well as, for me, the two tension points is one, what is the specific role of local government in development? This is a reciprocal issue between a bank and its clients, and that which you don't find with a commercial bank, you find with a development bank. So it's not the normal dogma that the owner of the bank appoints board members. But the discussion in the committee, actually, content-wise, have nothing to add. We will implement. Thanks, sir.
Your role becomes more active. You're going to assist us as we process this close by clause. We're doing an informal treatment. Formally, we'll consider the bill next week, sometime or the week after. But if we do the informal part very currently now, it'll mean that when we treat it formally, it's very quick. So, have you passed around a copy of the original hand? Okay. Okay, so, now, Advocate Jenkins,
we've been reading increasingly, yes, of course, you'll get to excuse it to answer me. What we've been reading about in the media and some of our experiences over the last 5 years is that committees process legislation, and then something goes wonky between the time we finalize the legislation and the time that the next version is printed and so on. So I think that's your role, I think, is to see what the committee has decided is actually what the outcome is when it's printed. Okay. So we are going to actually ask you to take us through the amendment bill. You've got section 1, you want to amend section 1. You'll take us through the amendments very quickly. Maybe we deal with all the amendments in 1, A, B, C, and D together.
Chairperson, clause 1 deals with proposed new definitions and amendments to existing definitions. The first one is authorized share capital, which is the total capital. And the second one is callable capital, which would be an authorized share capital less the issued share capital.
Please, you have to do it at the pace that the members feel comfortable.
Clause 1 contains proposed definitions, new definitions and amendments to existing definitions in the DBSA Act. The first one is a proposed new definition of authorized share capital, which would be the maximum amount of capital which the bank is authorized to raise in terms of Section 30. And you will note later that when we deal with the amendments to Clause 13, the need for these new definitions. And then the second paragraph, is in paragraph B, is two definitions. The first one is callable capital. Now that's the authorized share capital less the issued share capital. And then the second definition is Companies Act, which is used in a number of places of the Act, and therefore we thought it's proper to have a definition, and it refers to the new Companies Act of 2008. Then there's also a proposed definition of issued share capital, which I think is maybe obvious. That means the portion of the authorized share capital which the bank has issued. Then the last definition is an amendment to the definition of region. And as I indicated, well, I think in the initial briefing and also earlier, there is now the bank is allowed to operate in countries outside SADC, and that was done by means of a regulation amendment in December last year. But our view is that it's best that this be specifically regulated in the DBSA Act and not simply just to regulations, and also to allow more control to be provided for by the Minister of Finance. So therefore there's a new definition of region, and the current definition refers to South Africa. And then also the national territories of countries as determined by regulation. Now, prior to the December regulation amendment, it was all the study countries that were in the regulation.
Can I ask you a question? So, members of the court, we got an overview briefing. I can't just tell you, we got an overview briefing, so we'll link what is being said here with that. Now, can I ask you something? If on oversimplifies, right? Let's say authorized share capital, which is what the minister says, let's say DBSA can raise 10 rounds, right? He authorizes 10 rounds. Then the callable capital, the issued capital is, let's say you lend 3 rounds. That's the issued capital. So your callable capital is the remaining 7 rounds. Is that right?
Yes.
Alright, so that's what it means, basically. Okay. Right, over to members.
Thank you, Chair. It's 1D. And it's a solution for the definition of reason of the following generation means the national territory. The value of the national territory of the country is determined by regulation. Now, I assume in this context it meant SADC, if I'm right.
Yes, that's right.
And if the suggestion is that the regulation should be within TDSA, was there other institutions, for instance, like the African Development Bank, that has authority to regulate? If so, let's get the motivation. Why the indication to TDSA? Should I need to answer this?
On 1D, any other questions? Okay, over to you. As I understand this, excuse me, at the moment, the bank lends to Southern Africa and is increasingly doing so elsewhere through ministerial regulations. And what you're trying to do in the law now is to make clear that they can lend on the continent as a whole, right? That's what you think. Okay, the question now he's asking is it just a TDSA or other banks like the African Bank and so on that do this, and what role do they have in regulation? That's your question. Yeah. African Development Bank. Oh, the ADB. So in other words, the question has been raised, did come up earlier, I think. When we had the, interestingly, the same issue, I think, came up. Are we going to be competing with the ADB? That was the sort of question that came up. Yeah.
Chairperson, I didn't have an answer because it's not something that's regulated to South African law. So we'll have to establish and come back with an answer maybe when you do the formal clause by clause. But I'm sure that because the African Development Bank, the jurisdiction of the bank is the Isle of Africa.
Basically, I'm not questioning the decision. I want us to be at one and to be in a position to defend. Because it's not only about copying the African Development Bank, because its territory is wider than the TDSA. We need to understand first what we're venturing into. We look at our own capabilities, but we should be able to be the position to motivate the extension that we're doing, so that we understand what motivated the extension of the TDSA. Because I'll tell you, I know such is the relationship between the TDSA and the African. I'm saying, maybe I should not say it, I know it's a fact. I should say I know, in a way, that there's such a tension between the African Development Bank and TDSA in terms of territories. From my other life, in a way, in terms of how the nature of funding and how it has been spread and so on. So we need just to know what escalation is. There's a reason behind it. It cannot just be only because the African Development Bank has a wider territory for its focus. So that's we I think you know what I'm saying.
Not exactly what
you know. You know a lot about that.
I don't know why you hear
it. I think Chair, if you remember well, and I hear what Comrade Tan is saying, the same question was asked when the DBSA was here,
yeah,
and when the presentation was made. Not only did we refer to the African Development Bank, but we also referred to the newly formed bank, the BRICS
yeah,
bank, on how the relationships would be. And DBSA was very clear that the developmental issues, especially infrastructure and all other related things in Africa, the backlog is so huge that everybody has his or her space to play around and deal with it. So there's no competition, but there's complementary activities around all those. So if you remember, we also had the same issue, and one of the things that we even said, because I remember that's when even DBSA was saying We're no longer going to deal with the issue of feasibility studies and what, because this also nearly made us bankrupt and so on, because we were funding feasibility and so on. So we are removing that to this and all those things. So we thoroughly wanted to check on where's the pride of South Africa in the whole thing. And I think they were able to explain that. I'm not sure if I responded to Comrade Tami, but I wanted to allay a fear around those things.
Yeah, I think a bit more vividly than I do. But you're right, as you spoke, elements of what you said resonated with me. Those are some answers I think that came up. Makron?
No, I wanted to just add to think that we also consider other issues associated with the African markets, and there are responsible that, you know, you need to spread your risk. You can't have one institution financing whatever development or whatever infrastructure project or whatever. And they are therefore going to be playing in that syndication kind of space where you are not going alone, but you are going with others to in terms of money.
Yeah.
Okay,
National Treasury, do you want
to say anything? Yes, sir. I'm sure Chase was responded to by my colleagues, and then I made a rather upset that I don't have a particular point in which I needed to understand more, and now I'm made to understand by my colleague, and she's not a drafter, you see. So I want to know what was in the minds of the drafter, so that her understanding gels with my understanding. We are one. Because you need to respond me to by them, and I've got a follow up question. Now I must pose the follow up question to my colleague. And now the difficulty is that she's not a drafter.
That's fine. I think in fairness, you were not here and this issue was discussed. But it's good that you're picking it up because it reinforces the value of the earlier discussion. And I think Vicky gave a very vivid account. As I said, she remembered more than I did. But National Treasury, see, you have to reply. You're the executive. Parliament's asking you questions. So if, you know, you can't reply now, you can reply next week, but the question that's being asked is a reasonable one. But we have to bear in mind that it has been covered. But do you want to say anything in addition?
Yeah, Chris, can I just say two things? When we get to the calls that deals with the new scope of DBSA, which is clause 3, I think the discussion would be more pertinent as to it expanding beyond TRADEC. And what we're proposing. And then the second part about collaboration with other banks, development finance institutions, that there's a specific section 2A say, one of the ancillary objects of the bank shall be to assist other international, national, regional, and provincial initiatives in order to achieve an integrated finance system for development. So I think there's an obligation on DBSA to cooperate with the African Development Bank and the BRICS Bank. And
you see, what's being asked is a reasonable. It's a policy issue. If you look at 3, it doesn't answer that question. That's a generic power. I don't know why are we in this mode of, what's that expression again, John? People must cooperate, therefore it's going to happen. I think really what's being asked is, it's been covered previously by your colleagues very vividly, as Pinky says. So I think what we do in our report to Parliament is we say that if members agree that the committee feels that this is clause, they mean this. I mean, what do they mean? It's like saying, I think you know what I'm trying to say. So I think in our report to Parliament, we consider, if members agree, I'll do a draft. Something like, the committee feels that community welcomes the extension of the bank's role on the rest of the continent within its budgetary and other constraints, right? The committee feels that due consideration needs to be given to the role of the African Development Bank and managing any turf and other issues, we find a diplomatic way of saying that may arise, and alert the National Treasury to seek to be cautious about this, something like that. It's clumsily worded, but I'll word something. How about that? That covers up in our report to Parliament, saying that we welcome it, but we think you have to be careful.
I think what Nadia says is my own sense as well from a distance, right? You know more about these things than I do, but that's my sense also. Okay, so that's done. We'll cover that. Are you noting this, Adam, the things that I have to draft as well? David?
Yes, listen, I'm directly taking the, can I call it a cautious approach to this, because it might have a profound implication.
That's what you were about to say, as long as you know that.
But let me just finish saying, the Development Bank of South Africa, I think if we expand further into Africa, that the capital that we need is 15.2 billion, according to the press release, 15.2 billion. Remember that we've also allocated 10 billion in terms of the BRICS Bank. And then in terms of Able Bank, I think the layout was 17 billion. Those are the issues we need to consider. There's a lot of banks, there's a lot of recapitalization, there's a lot of funds allocated, although it's not always in cash, it could be in pledges, or perhaps we'll have to go to the equity markets to fund this. But this should be a huge concern to everybody.
Generic point is not relevant to 1D particularly, but we will take that into account when we do our report to Parliament. I don't know, you don't take that, though. Okay, let's go to the next section of the string one. Section 2 is being... Oh, sorry, is it Thandi? Oh, sorry. Oh.
Chairperson, well, perhaps I can hold until the end my comment. Thanks.
I don't know what you're going to say. But anyway, amendment of Section 2, that's straightforward one. Okay, 3. Countries of operations of bank.
Is the one that's now supposed to deal with the mandate of the bank in the sense of where they can operate. Now, currently, the DBSA access is South Africa and the region determined by the Minister of Finance, and by regulation, it's all Sadiq countries and all other African countries. That's the mandate, but we propose it just now as the chairperson indicated that instead of ministerial regulations, we regulate this in the Act, and to specifically say that it includes South Africa and in all the countries of the SADC community. Then the third one is the important one, 2A1C, the national territory of such other country on the African continent. As the minister may determine by regulation. So the expansion into other African countries would be done on a country basis, and it will be subject to an annual plan approved by the minister on the activities. And then that plan must be submitted to the minister, and the minister will determine the form and the date when it should be submitted. And there's also authority for the minister to amend that annual plan after consultation with the bank. So that is the proposal regarding the country's operation of the bank.
Mr. Bemis, on section 3. Are we fine? Okay, section 4.
Section 4 is simply an alignment to the language of the New Companies Act. The current DBS Act refers to the 1973 Act and 2008 the New Companies Act.
Candy, you got it right, haven't they? You're accountable for the Act. When you do the final draft, put in brackets there, MD Sandy Tobias agrees, close the brackets. So there's something wrong there, Advocate Jenkins, you can't be blamed. The madam there can be blamed for all agreeing to it. Okay, amendment of Section 13 of Act 13 of that's 5.
Section 5 deals with the shared capital of the bank. And the first proposed amendment is that it's an increase of the authorized shared capital from 5,000 million to 20 billion and 200 million rand. And also the division into ordinary shares is changed. And then there's provision relating to the certificates to be issued to the government for paid up shares. And then important in 5B, and this is the proposed new 2A, is that we propose that the minister be authorized after consultation with the board of the bank to increase the amount of the authorized capital of the bank and the number of ordinary shares. So instead of coming back to Parliament to amend the Osashi capital in the African to reply why it's not different because so that's that part. And the amendments continue regarding section 13. The first one, the provision that deals with the subscription to the balance of the Osashi capital, so that's the part that's not been issued. Currently the board can request and then the state must just issue the share cap on and pay out the shares, which in our view is a problem, so we propose that it must be subject to approval of a meeting of the shareholders, and currently the state is the only shareholders. Then the last amendment is just an addition of the word issued in line with the proposed definitions of issued share capital.
Chair, before I speak, I need you to protect me from thinking because the reason why I was not here, I reported to you really.
No, point of order. Members, will you all confirm that every meeting I gave a full and comprehensive explanation that Tandi is not here? And how much we miss her. And tears were rolling down my rolling down my cheeks, right? Did I also say yesterday, first thing, before I welcomed members, I said, Tandi Tobias unfortunately can't be here today. And I meant to say, but somebody distracted me, Alan. I meant to say, and we are all the poorer for that. But Alan distracted me with something.
Then
I cried, yeah.
I'm going to ask a funny question. You know, 5A and B to me sounds contradictory. In the first place, why do you legislate for share capital? Why do you put figures in legislation? Why is it not in legislation? And then you then come back and say, in an event that you need to reconsider that the minister may put a notice in the Gazette, what's the intended consequence of wanting us to legislate for that? I think it's nonsense, can't try. But I need to understand it. It doesn't make sense, especially if you put less than 10. In case you need to change it. Because it should, it can fluctuate, it can go up and down. And I don't want to come back here and say, we can deal with the rest of the test again. I don't know. I was not here, it might have been covered.
No,
yeah, it does look a bit. I also picked up the same thing. Interestingly, I had a reverse view. Before you go for me, you will certainly answer. Otherwise, I'll get all up there.
You answer first.
I'm sorry. No, I respectfully concur with the members, the point that he made. Sorry, I respectfully concur with the point that the member made. I think if we look at it now, the current act provides for the stipulated numbers, and we wanted to increase that. And in the process, we see that it's very difficult every time we need to come back to Parliament, so we want the power for the minister. But if it's the committee's in agreement, we just give the power to the minister to determine all five seconds of full stop, then we don't put the numbers in the act.
As she was reading, the same thing struck me. Why do you want to put the figure there? And then if you're the full power to the minister, he or she doesn't come back to Parliament, he just goes and changes it. But then what struck me, why I thought maybe we should keep it, and I don't have a strong view about this, is maybe we keep it because it holds the executive to account, to Parliament. That means they're not going to just, like, do things. Let's say you've got a populist-type minister of finance, and just go ahead and lead us headlong into, like, challenges, right? Now, I know this sounds like a very DA-type argument, but it could also be a reverse side, you know, like an ultra-left sort of populism that might happen, and then, you know, people can do what they want. So that's why I'm ambivalent about it. But if the majority don't want it there, I'm cool. Why is Smiley so sweet, please? Is he Canadian? Yeah.
There's another way to hold the minister accountable without putting a kind of, we might have a line that says, when the minister changes the regulation, must inform, there's this legal
jargon that you know lawyers put to make him come back and account and say to us, now we're going to change the figures because of this dividend assessment, without necessarily limiting it. I don't know. But it to me, it doesn't make legal sense and financial sense to put it in legislation. And we used to say it doesn't overwhelm to change and shock legislation every 5 minutes. Legislation to be able to cover a broad spectrum and the policies and the regulations will be the ones that actually we say that. So maybe we change. I don't know, in this context. So we I don't want to get into much space on that. It was there, but it is still reasonable to have it like that. We can put words that can cover them without necessarily saying 5 rounds, 10 rounds, and so on, really. I don't know. I agree with them both.
What do other members feel? John and Makosi.
Thank you, Chairperson. I think we have said this before in various other committees as well. We are concerned about regulations generally because we do find that they get too broad. And when law is written, it should be written. So it should be in the legislation. And then regulations are really about rolling out and making the policies, appropriate policies to get the regulation rolled out. That's our view. And I think in this instance also, it's too broad. You know, if you look at what the minister can do, it's a lot of things that can be done, and we think that is not, it's not good. We think that they should be narrowed down, and that if there are substantial changes to be made, then it needs to come back to Parliament, and Parliament needs to agree or not. So that is our position on regulation here and generally, which I think you do know. Thank you, Chair.
Very helpful to the issue at hand. You're making a generic point which most parties can agree with. I mean, the act of chairpersons and committees refused to allow ministers from the ANC in a previous era to just regulate. So it's not just a DA issue. But really, on this matter, do people have a view now? What is the view of the committee? I'm ambivalent. I don't feel strongly either way. But I don't know what other members feel. Makosi?
I just wanted to find out, is there no principle that informed mentioning the amount, given the fact that you are talking about the share capital here? I just need to understand I was not part of the previous discussion, because there may be an underlying principle that informed the coaching, the I wasn't clear with the legislation myself. I need to understand the principles, because there must be something that informs that. I'm just worried about us saying, no, we're doing away with it without just understanding what was the rationale for it right from the beginning, especially because we are talking about the share capital. We are not just talking about any other share. We're talking about the share capital and the qualification of the ordinary share.
Yes, Jefferson, I share the concerns, if I may say so, the previous speaker, you know, because the bank reported a loss of operations of 706 million in the year to end March 2013, from a loss of 108 million the year before. And then there's also something that's of concern. The committee also heard, and that was in the last presentation, the government was considering subsidizing the interest due by municipalities on DBS loans. So municipalities has huge problems in terms of servicing their debt to the bank. And perhaps the key word that my colleague has mentioned is the risk factor. And I think what they're trying to do is extend the mandate of the bank so as to make the bank more viable in terms of, and then the capital needed for this is what we need to iron out. And there is also really a prominent person that gave a briefing and perhaps revisit us. I think it's Mr. Radicali, Treasury's Asset and Liability Management Director. And he is a financial expert, and perhaps we will understand better if he can explain to us how they will sort of structure the funding of the bank in terms of the overseas operations. Because in terms of that, there's also a breakdown that I have here that 38.5 billion will be earmarked for South Africa and 60.7 billion for the rest of Africa. So that, those are figures that we need to consider. But I think we need to have a sort of an extra meeting in terms of our financial briefing where we're going to with the bank so that we can take an informed decision before we legislate. That would be my idea. Thank you.
Chair,
I have
something about a situation where we get into the space where we need to cut the risk and this management. I do not want us to do that. That's why I was saying, I know Makusi knows the answer and she can advise the committee because it's the space that she's operated as for a very long time. The limitation of hearing numbers is when tomorrow my friend Johan they come and say, no, but this is what we said we do and this is not what we've done. Actually, we did not reach out again. Here, we try to legislate in terms of what is our share capital. Do we want to put the share capital in rents and cents in the legislation? Or do we want to have policies and regulations that address that, provided that we are taken on board as parliament when we legislate? This is why I wanted, I followed up on the question I was supposed to say, what was the reason behind? And the question, the second question I'm asking, because I agree with the question, is was there a need to put it in rent and cents? Didn't we need to have it in words that covers the space? So that tomorrow, she now says an engineer, but when it's not the issue that I am, Dion must not come and ask us this question. We say, let the government explain in terms of their performance, because there's an annual report anyway that will be presented that will state whether we're able to reach our targets or not. But if it's a legislation, we're going to say, no, you were supposed to reach it, so we hold you accountable. What if the need is not to work? No.
Okay. We need some direction here. If nobody else wants to comment, I'd like to suggest, look, sorry, Spongiven?
I think, Chairperson, the matter of the rents and cents being put into the regulations would be more ideal than being put in the Act because, you know, like has been discussed by most of our colleagues here, it would actually make the Minister to be able to come back to Parliament and actually make a request in that manner. I think that would assist us. And I think our Honourable Advocate from the other side also actually, yeah. She also agreed in her input. So I think Chairperson, when looking at this matter, if we were to take it in that way, it would take us somewhere. As well as the inputs that came up from the DA here, you know, how many millions or billions are supposed to be given to whatever area, as well as the gentleman, I think it's mentioned Mr. Radhikari coming in to explain some of those matters, I think it would assist us.
Look, I'll deal with process issues. I'm not sure what we do about 5A. The one is, if you bring in that gentleman, he is going to deal with the the reason why you got these particular figures, the implications and so on, right? Now, I don't know that our two gentlemen here from PBO have any expertise in this area to assist us to evaluate the technical substance of what that person would say. Makosi probably, of the members, has got the best practical understanding, but but I don't know that, you know, we can match the day-to-day technical expertise of National Treasury. So I'm not sure what the value data would be of bringing that guy again. The issue really is a policy one. Do we have the figure in the law or not? And secondly, if we decide to dispose of the figure, we have to be very clear, as my question says, why do we have the figure in the first place? Secondly, we have to ask ourselves what implications removal of the figure will have for oversight responsibilities. And the sort of questions that the DA from its perspective and myself from my perspective is saying that, you know, could lead to consequences that, you know, later down. The current minister is a very sober, sensible person.
What do we know about what's going to happen 5-10 years from now and so on, right? The other thing to say is that if you look at B, when there was a period from around, I think, 2000 onwards, when in fact Srinijan Wala, the Speaker of Parliament, has helped raise this issue, that we are allowing too much of latitude to ministers to regulate. And what ministers were doing and departments were doing, where they got defeated by a committee on a clause, what they would do is they would use the regulations to reintroduce the very same provision that the parliamentary committee rejected. So there was a groundswell of opposition to regulations with ministers just having the latitude. So there was an agreement, I don't know what has happened since then, that where possible and as far as possible, regulation should be brought to Parliament. But the problem, members, is that on Parliament side, we don't have the time or the capacity to look at those regulations. So there was an agreement, I remember in the local government legislation, we said the minister must bring the regulations before Parliament. However, if within 30 working days or something, the Parliament has not given its opinion, the regulations will be regarded as having come into effect. And when we looked at it around 1 year, we discovered that 70-80% of the time, Parliament didn't even bother to look at those regulations. So we should be very careful. What I would like to suggest is that you go back to your officials and find out why this was there. That maybe you engage the minister as well and ask if there are practical consequences to not having the figure there. I tend to think let's not have it, but at the same time, very practical things. So I feel we should be slightly cautious about taking a decision now. Can you give us some time? I'll engage with you and the DG and the minister and so on and give you a report back. And then we decide. I think there is a study group meeting next Tuesday. We can look at it there. DA can discuss it in the study group. We're not going to vote on this bill next week. So I think, can we raise the issues with the relevant authorities and then decide? I will give you a report back. Yeah, Tandy, you want to say something? Okay. All right. Then on C and D, any questions? D is a minor technical one. And C calls, what exactly is C again, just remind us? On the top of page 4.
What we should be added is that the cause of share capital that's not issued, the callable share capital. Currently, the board can any time come to the state and say it's pay up to the rest of the share capital. What we propose is that it should be subject to approval from the shareholders.
Yeah. Okay, so
the D, the minor one, section 6.
The amendments to this is the regulation making power of the Minister of Finance. What we said is that there's some regulations, if you go through the Act, it says the Minister must make regulations, so that's covered in 17.1. But then there's other regulations, it's in the discretion of the Minister whether to make regulations. And then there's also a requirement which we still have to retain on the request of shareholders or the board. Now, obviously the shareholding can change in the future where there's more than one shareholder. We also allow the board to request amendments. Now, in the list of the current powers, there are three changes. The first one is we took out the one that deals with the determination of national territories which constitute the region, because previously the region in which the bank may operate is determined by the minister, but it would be now in the Act, and we also, Then the second amendment is the one that we want to allow the minister to regulate the use of the callable capital, so that's the unissued share capital, we can call it that, to calculate its leverage and ratio for loans. Then the last amendment is an amendment to limit the power of the minister, because our view was that the current wording there is too wide, should say as unnecessary or useful to discard. and you use the wording as ancillary or incidental, administered or procedural matter that necessary to prescribe for the implementation or administration of this act. And this is generally the proposed wording that the state will advise us and provide to us for new legislation.
Okay. Anything members of the race there? I think that's straightforward. Okay, then the final section, 7.
The final section is this. It's currently the issue provision that the provisions of other acts the minister can apply to the bank, and we try to make it clearer. The other acts that could be applied is obviously the Companies Act, but the DVSA is not a company in terms of its name is registered for purposes so that other companies can't use the name, but it's not a company under the Companies Act. Well, there's a number of provisions that even you look at the regulations that does apply to DPSA or similar, and then also the Banks Act, because it is a bank, and then if they consider necessary, then they can apply other appropriate legislation to the bank, but obviously none of those provisions will contradict what's in the DPSA Act.
Yeah, that's
it for three questions,
no? The CFO, you just made
your biggest preamble? It has no legal meaning, if I'm correct, right? The preamble.
It could, if there's interpretation,
it can use it. Yeah.
The main change is the region of operation.
Yeah, okay. Any questions? No. A big round of applause for the chairperson. We finished 1.5 hours beforehand. So, consider what Tandy thinks about me. Dot, dot, dot. Okay. Thank you very much, members. We see you next week.